Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The organization We Are Not Numbers was founded in 2014 to elevate the voices of young Palestinians who have endured unspeakable struggles and losses, who keep fighting to be recognized not as numbers, but as human beings with hopes, dreams, and lives worth living. Their website says, when the world talks about Palestinians living under occupation and in refugee camps, it's usually in terms of politics and numbers, specifically how many killed, injured, displaced, homeless, and/or dependent on aid. But numbers are impersonal and often numbing. What they don't convey are the daily personal struggles and triumphs, the tears and the laughter, the dreams and aspirations that are universally experienced, but not often recognized for Palestinians, who instead have been dehumanized. That's why we established an aspiring wordsmiths from around the world. That's why they've joined with young people from Palestine to create We Are Not Numbers. Through this platform, We Are Not Numbers shares with the world authentic and compelling stories from the next generation of Palestinian writers and leaders. A few of their most recent pieces are Has He Returned Yet? By Shahed Abu al-Sheikh. It should not have been necessary for my brother to risk death at Gaza's aid trucks to get food. The Vegetable Basket That Once Fed Gaza by Dania Abusita. Israel has bulldozed the fertile area of Mirage, destroying Gaza's ability to feed itself and sentencing the people to a slow death. We Sold Our House to Survive Another Day by Reem Sleem. We came to Egypt fleeing death, but in exile, suffering continues to chase us, and we face an uncertain future. Today, we are joined by the co-founder of We Are Not Numbers and two contributors. Ahmed Al-Nok is co-editor and co-writer of the new book, We Are Not Numbers, The Voices of Gaza's Youth. Ahmed is director and co-founder of We Are Not Numbers. He was raised in Deir al-Balah, a community in the middle of the Gaza Strip. He lost his brother Ayman on July 19, 2014. Ayman and four of his best friends were killed by an Israeli missile. Ahmed's mother, Basima, died of breast cancer in 2020 because of the Israeli blockade, which denies Palestinians in Gaza advanced medical care. And then on October 22, 2023, an Israeli bombardment killed 21 of Ahmed's family members, including his father, Nasri. Ahmed is now based in London. Ahmed, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm so sorry for all of the loss that you've endured and what is still now happening in Gaza. It's hard to even come up with words. But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're also joined by Ali Abu Sheikh, a Canaanite Palestinian writer and digital humanist who has lived through the first 6 months of war. Ali is now based in Doha. Hi, Ali. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, you're more than welcome. Thanks for hosting us.
Thank you. And we're joined by Haneen Abdal Abi, an English literature graduate and writer for We Are Not Numbers. Haneen is now based in Ontario, Canada. Hi, Haneen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, it is so rare to hear from Palestinians, especially young Palestinians. And I'd like to ask you all to share a little bit about your background. And of course, we're going to spend the hour talking about the loss, what has happened to Gaza, what continues to happen to Gaza. But before we do that, I wonder if you can just share some of your favorite memories of Gaza. A lot of people do not know much about Gaza other than seeing so much death and destruction. Ahmed, let's start off with you.
Thank you very much for having me, Rose. And I think it's a very difficult question to start the conversation with. And I would like to remind you that I am alive. I am here speaking to you. I am alive just because I am outside of Gaza. Mm. If I were in Gaza at the time of the genocide, I would most probably have been killed with the rest of my family members. And you know, it is very difficult to ask this question because we Palestinians who live in the West or in the East, when we think of Gaza, everything we care about is gone. Nearly everyone we care about in Gaza is either killed or starved or injured. Everything I care about inside of Gaza, the buildings, the schools, the mosques, the Mina, the seaport, the streets, the neighborhoods, everything we care about is gone. For me, Gaza is what I care about most about in my life. I care about my home most. My home was gone. I care about my university where I did my bachelor degree. It is gone. The seaport where I used to spend most of my time at after college and after work is gone. The streets, I no longer can recognize the streets of Gaza. I can no longer recognize the places of Gaza. Everything, Rose, everything that we care about is gone. And we are watching the suffering, the misery, the destruction of our country, of our people from afar on daily basis for 22 months now. For 22 months, for God's sake now, the people in Gaza have been besieged. They have been surrounded by everywhere from all the sides, and they have been enduring bombs falling on them day and night without a moment pause. And you know what's the harshest reality is that the people in Gaza can't even escape it. They can't escape the continuous bombardment of them. They can't escape the starvation. They can't escape seeing their children, their neighbors, their brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers being killed day and night. And we, from our side, from afar, we are watching this misery. We are watching this horror. And there is nothing in our power that we can do to stop it.
Ahmed, just to learn, I learned about the death of your 21 family members, including your father, when it happened. But then to read this book and learn about your brother and your mom, the thing that keeps going through my mind, Ahmed, is how are you able to grieve given everything you just described, that everything you love is now gone?
Rose, it's not only my father and my brother and my mother that I lost. I lost three brothers. I lost three sisters. I lost 14 nieces and nephews. I lost my mother. I lost my father. And you know, after the 22nd of October 2023, I stopped counting how many people I lost in Gaza. I stopped counting how many cousins I lost. I stopped counting how many friends, how many neighbors I lost. And you know, we are not numbers, and I stopped counting. How do I grieve? I don't have the luxury to grieve my parents. I don't have the luxury to grieve my home, my city, my neighborhood. We don't have this luxury. I have said it 100 times before. We don't have that luxury right now. We have the responsibility to talk about them, to tell their stories, to share their life, to celebrate their life with the world. And that is what I have been doing over the past 22 months after the loss of my family. I have been doing this. I do not have time to grieve. I did not even cry them enough. I did not even express my feeling enough, because unfortunately what happened to my family has happened for thousands of other families, and it's still happening for other families. So I'm just focused. I'm just spending most of my time now talking about the other Palestinians, telling their stories, and trying to end this horror that has been inflicted on them for the past 22 months. And unfortunately, I haven't had the time to grieve.
That is Ahmed Al-Nawk, who's out with a new book, We Are Not Numbers, The Voices of Gaza's Youth. He's director and co-founder of We Are Not Numbers. He was raised in Deir al-Balah, a community in the middle of the Gaza Strip. He lost his brother Ayman on July 19th, 2014, by an Israeli missile. His mom, Basima, died of breast cancer in 2020 because of the blockade. And then on October 22nd, 2023, an Israeli bombardment killed 21 of his family members, including his father, siblings, nieces, nephews. And as he said, he's watching this all from London. Ahmed, we'll talk later in the show about how you got to London, but a lot of people don't know how this all works. Could you go back to Gaza right now if you wanted to?
Oh, no one could go back to Gaza. Even I know tens of doctors, British doctors, who want to go to Gaza right now to treat the patients. And they could not. Do you know why we could not go back to Gaza? Because Israel is blockading us. Israel has been blockading us for the past 18 years. No one is allowed to enter. No one is allowed to leave, except for very, very, very few cases. And I attempted to go back to Gaza after I finished my master's degree here in the UK, but I could not because the borders are closed. We need permission from Israel to go back to our country. We need permission from the occupation to leave our country. We need permission from the occupation to enter our country. We need permission from the Israeli occupation to do anything, to move from one part to another within our country. So unfortunately, we have been denied this right of movement for a long, long, long time, not even after the 7th of October, but way before that. My mother died because she was not given a permit to travel to another Palestinian hospital to receive a treatment. She died because of that. Well, they gave her the permit eventually when she was dying, literally. And when she went to Jerusalem to receive a treatment, the doctors told me it is too late. They told me she could have been cured if she arrived earlier. But unfortunately, the Israelis delayed her permit. The same thing as they did for hundreds and thousands of other Palestinian patients. And all of that happened before October the 7th. So it's not an outcome of what happened on October the 7th. It has been the case for the Palestinians for many, many, many years.
To your point, Ahmed, we've had a number of doctors on and a nurse who traveled to Gaza many times. And of course, you know this better than anyone. The stories that they're bringing back are horrific, about gunshots to the head, about so many children who are losing their limbs. And NPR just had a piece yesterday about how now Israel is increasingly barring American doctors who want to get inside Gaza. And these are the doctors that are speaking out nonstop. And so now they're not letting them go.
Yes, of course they will not let them go because they know that Israel banned international journalists from going to Gaza. And now they're killing the Palestinian journalists in Gaza. Why? Because they don't want to know what they are doing in Gaza, because they don't want the truth to be revealed to the world. And they know that the doctors, when they go to Gaza, they will report. They will work as journalists, unfortunately, because there is no one else to speak for the Palestinians in Gaza. So they will ban doctors, American doctors and British doctors from going to Gaza because these people will tell the story of Gaza, because they will tell the story of what happened in Gaza, because they will say their testimony to the world from hospitals. And Israel is not interested in that. But more than that, Israel does not want doctors to go to Gaza because they don't want the patients in Gaza to be treated. They're banning even baby formula. They're banning diapers for people. They're banning medical supplies to go to Gaza. They're doing all of this because they want to end and they want to destroy anything that gives way of life to the Palestinians in Gaza. This is a genocide, and Israel is carrying out a genocide in Gaza. And they don't want anyone to know about it. They don't know anyone to know what is actually happening in Gaza.
We're going to do a show tomorrow on the journalists who continue to be killed by Israeli bombardments and drones. Five journalists were recently killed. Another five were killed on Monday. And we're going to talk about that tomorrow. That is Ahmed Al-Nawk, author of the new book, We Are Not Numbers, The Voices of Gaza's Youth. We're also joined by Ali Abu Sheikh, a Canaanite Palestinian writer and digital humanist who lived through the first 6 months of the war. Ali, you traveled to Qatar to pursue a master's degree in digital humanities and social sciences. In 2022, after you graduated, you returned to Gaza and you were caught in the war. Just before the border closed in the summer of last year, you managed to return to Qatar. You're now hoping to bring your mom out of Gaza. Can you tell us, how is your family? How many family members are in Gaza? I can't, it's just hard to ask these questions. How many people have you lost?
Yeah, so to be honest, that's a very tough question. And after what everything Ahmed just said, it really affected me so hard. Like, I could relate to it, but still my pain and suffering is nothing compared to Ahmed losing this big number. Family is something that you can't even think of enduring. So thankfully, I haven't lost any close family members, but I still lost family members in my extended family. Same for my mother, same for my father. I've lost many friends, I've lost neighbors, that's for sure. And regarding your question, how my family are doing, it's such a very tough question. I try to call them on a daily basis, as long as there is network for sure. And they always pretend to be okay, but their voices could tell you everything. They're not doing well at all. With everything they go through, they keep getting displaced from a place to another, from a place to another, from a place to another. They keep thinking how to secure food for today, how to, even if they secure the food, how to divide it, for example, for as much as it could bear. So for example, if they have this 2 kilos of flour, they have to plan how they can serve it for a very long time so that they could survive what's going on right now. So as you know, there is a real famine in Gaza, and you also ask about your memories of Gaza. As there is currently a famine in Gaza, I always think of how delicious food was in Gaza. Gaza is so famous for food, delicious food. Even Gaza itself as a city has its own dishes that even other Palestinian cities like in the West Bank, in the North, in the South, don't even know. They used to come to Gaza to eat such dishes, which are very traditional. Food was never a burden in Gaza. And people would never ask for a piece of a bread, but now they really dream of a piece of a bread as if it is a bar of chocolate. And I went through this. I even used to dream of eating a banana. Even during the first 6 months of war, we used to go through such times, but now it's way, way, way harder that you can't even describe it. But I know this feeling of a dreaming of a cup of tea, of a dreaming of a banana, of an apple, of a bar of a chocolate, of some biscuits. These things they haven't eaten for so long. And that's what hurts me most, which makes our lives abroad way harder, that we don't really have a life. So whenever someone asks me, how are you, which is a question I hate so much, I would only say, I'm physically alive. Let's put it this way. Because we can't really continue on our lives knowing that our families in Gaza are going through such very tough, unbearable times that you can't even imagine to go through.
Ali, it's so true. You can't even imagine. Watching all of this unfold on our screens over the last 2 years has just been shocking. And I can't even imagine what it's like for you. You're in Qatar, and this is happening to your family and your loved ones. What is it like for you to watch from the outside? How are you coping with all of this?
Actually, I can't cope. I'm still not coping. And this is something that even in psychotherapy, they are trying to study. Like, usually you have something for post-war trauma, but not for continuous war trauma. And I still have this, even since I left the Gaza Strip, I had this prison trauma that I even discussed with my psychotherapist, that once I got out, I always feel like someone is coming, like the police or an army or anyone would just come to imprison me. Anyone would just come to take my freedom back, because those 6 months during the war, they were the worst in my whole life. They felt like 6 years. I felt so restricted. I felt imprisoned because I was imprisoned as everyone else now in Gaza there. So I don't think there is a coping mechanism. All we can do is, unfortunately, I wouldn't say unfortunately, actually, it's just your body, how it reacts to such a traumas, is you try to not think about them as much. You try to escape thinking about them. And this is one of the reasons I still can't write anything about my experience during the current genocide, because I can't really revisit such memories. I used to take notes. I can't revisit such notes. I can't revisit the photos I used to take. I just can't go back, because if I do, if I open the door to remember a single moment, this would bring back so many other moments or painful memories that I don't think would help me even go on with everything going on in my life. So I wish one day maybe magic could just happen and we could just learn to cope, or maybe this magic again could end the war, because it doesn't seem to end.
That is Ali Abu Sheikh, a Canaanite Palestinian writer and digital humanist who lived through the first 6 months of the Israeli assault. He's now based in Doha. He traveled to Qatar to pursue a master's degree in digital humanities and social sciences. After he graduated, he returned to Gaza and was caught in the war. Just before the border closed last summer, he managed to return to Qatar. He is now hoping to bring his mother out of Gaza. Today, we're also joined by Hanin Abdalabi, an English literature graduate and writer for We Are Not Numbers. Hanin, her youngest sister, and her mom managed to make it to the United States and then to Canada before Israel launched its assault. They hope to earn permanent residence and then bring the rest of the family to join them. Hanin, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us, how is your family and who have you lost in Gaza?
I've been hearing Ahmed and Ali. I was about to cry, but I'm in a cafe. I should just hold my tears. Everything that both of them said just touched me, because I think all of us are going through a lot. For me, I didn't lost like my family, but I lost my best friends. I lost many relatives, many cousins. I lost my home. And it's just hard, because I left Gaza just 1 month before everything started with my mom and my sister, and the rest of my family is in Gaza, which is my dad, my three sisters, my two brothers, and my two nephews. It's a hard, I would say, life, because I always say that this, if I knew that October 7 will happen, I will never leave Gaza, because I prefer whether die together or live together. Because being separated is very hard on me. Like every day is, I would say, a hard process for us, because it's been almost 2 years. We've been waiting to have our permanent residence so we can bring my family. But it's tough for Palestinian. Wherever they go, they make it harder for them. So my family is like all other families. They've been evacuating many times. They are living in the hardest life. Like no one would imagine what they've been through. And sometimes I feel that we are in a dream, and maybe we will wake up and everything is fine, because losing everything is hard. It's not easy. And we keep losing. We keep thinking, are they going to make it today, or we're going to lose them? So for us, every day is a nightmare, especially that I'm away from my family, and I'm a family person. For me, families is everything. My family is everything. My brothers and sister are the whole world for me. And one thing I would just say and add, the home that I lost is the home that I once hosted my friends from We Are Not Numbers in. Ahmed and Ali was hosting in my my home in Gaza. We were like not just friends or just writers that in the same team. We were like family. So it's hard that we all of us are going through a lot, and everybody is losing something that's nobody can imagine, because everybody is going through a lot. And as Ali said, it's been almost 2 years and I'm not writing anything. I want to write, but I think there is something inside me that prevents me from writing. It's just hard. Even in May, 3 months ago in May, my sister got injured with her husband. That was the hardest day for me. And I tried to write about my experience, how I got the call from my dad and how I know everything, how my sister, she's suffering now and she needs like to be treated outside, but she can't leave. So, but I couldn't, like, even writing about the things that we've been through is just hard. We are traumatized. And for me, I'm waiting for this to end so I can write. The only thing that I'm doing is just speaking here in Canada in different places so I can tell people the truth, tell them that the things that they don't know, the things that I've been through, because I live in Gaza for 26 years, my whole life is there. So this is what we've been through.
Hanin Abdelabi is an English literature graduate and a writer for We Are Not Numbers. They were founded in 2014 to elevate the voices of young Palestinians who keep fighting to be recognized not as numbers, but as human beings with hopes, dreams, and lives worth living. We're also joined today by Ali Abu Sheikh, a Canaanite Palestinian writer and digital humanist who lived through the first 6 months of the assault. He is now based in Doha. Ahmed Alnak is director and co-founder of We Are Not Numbers. Ahmed lost his brother Ayman on July 19th, 2014. He and four best friends were killed by an Israeli missile. Ahmed's mother, Basima, died of breast cancer in 2020 because of the Israeli blockade. And then on October 22nd, 2023, an Israeli bombardment killed 21 of his close family members, including his father, Nasri. Ahmed is now based in London. If you have any questions, comments for these young Palestinians, it is so rare to hear Palestinians at all, but definitely young Palestinians in the media. It is so rare to hear about their stories. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on our media roundtable tomorrow, we will discuss the Israeli military's continued killing of Palestinian journalists in Gaza. On August 10th, five journalists were killed. Another five were killed on Monday. At least 247 Palestinian journalists have been killed since October 7th. Many have written their own wills and final messages. Gaza is now the deadliest place on earth to be a journalist. Today, we are talking with young Palestinians. The organization We Are Not Numbers was founded in 2014 to elevate the voices of young Palestinians who are fighting to be recognized not as numbers, but as human beings with hopes, dreams, and lives worth living. We're joined by Ahmed Alnak, who is co-editor and co-writer of the new book, We Are Not Numbers, The Voices of Gaza's Youth. We're also joined by two contributors, Ali Abu Sheikh and Hanin Abdelabi. Ahmed is now in London. Ali is now in Qatar. Hanin is in Ontario. They all would love to go back to Gaza, but they cannot. They are watching all of this unfold from outside of Gaza. We have an email from Jim who writes, "Thank you for putting faces on the people affected by Israel's genocide in Gaza. My mother was a Holocaust survivor. She taught me that a necessary condition of genocide is dehumanization. I am horrified and still figuring out what can I do to help end this horror." We have a few other emails that are similar to Jim's, people saying, what can we do to end this horror? And Ahmed, you know, you're talking to people in the Bay Area and other parts of the country in the United States. What do you want to say to them? I was just looking for an article about the U.S. sending weapons to Israel. And here's one from February. Trump administration moves to send $8 billion in arms to Israel, bypassing lawmakers. Biden announced the arms sale at the end of his administration. Trump is pushing it soon after his meeting with Netanyahu.
So you're asking about my message to the American people?
What would you like to say? Because this could not happen without support from the United States government. Okay.
So allow me to say something that might be tough to your listeners. But on October 22nd, an American airplane, American-made airplane, dropped an American bomb on my family that killed the vast majority of my family members. Your taxes, the money that you paid for your government, killed my family. It killed 14 of my nieces and nephews, 14 kids, all under the age of 13. Some of them were only 2 years old and 3 years old and 5 years old. These kids did not deserve to die in this barbaric way. They had dreams. They had a future. They wanted to live. A few days before they were killed, they called me. And it was still the beginning of the genocide. And they told me that they loved me, that they wanted to become like me. They told me, these nieces and nephews, that they saw me a role model and they wanted to study English and they wanted to travel the world. They wanted to come to the UK and the US and they wanted to be like me. And yet they were killed with an American-made weapon, American-made bomb. So my thought is this. Imagine for a day that a foreign country came to your lovely streets and homes and towns, and they circulated it, they bombed it, they started killing everyone you know and everyone you care about, all the places that you love, all the places that you belong to. And one day, they even started killing your journalists, your doctors, everyone you know, everyone you care about. What would you want others to do? What would you want those normal people whose money and taxes are being used to bomb your country? What would you want them to do? I don't know. This is a very difficult question. And even in my events here in the UK, when people ask me what my message to them, what I want them to do, I would ask them to put themselves in our shoes and to wonder what would others want them to do for us. What would you want others to do for you? It's a very tough question, a very tough thing. But the Palestinians deserve to live. We deserve to live in dignity, in freedom. And unfortunately, the American bombs are preventing that. It is stopping that. It is killing us. And your voice matters. Your voice matters. You live in a democracy, as you were told. As I was told that America is a democracy. I was told that the power is with the people. I thought that your voice matters, that your action matters. So what would you do when you see your weapons, your taxes, your money being used to bomb, to starve another population, another indigenous population? Think about it and then act on it.
Ali, what would you like to add? What would you like to say to our audience in the Bay Area and beyond? Ali, are you still
with us? I think
Ali's
muted.
Oh, you might be muted,
yes,
Ali.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
no problem.
I was muted. I was saying, I think Ahmed almost covered everything I would say. But I kind of recently, especially during this war, lost the hope that even talking would help, writing would help, taking to the streets and the protests would help. I think nothing would help. I feel so helpless and so hopeless, to be honest, because, I mean, the whole world is just watching and they're not doing enough. I don't think they are doing enough. But if I really want Americans to do something, is I still know many people who don't even care, or those people who still take the side, they have this one-sided mentality and they don't want to change it. They see the truth in front of their eyes, but they don't even make the effort to realize what's going on. So all I would say is educate yourselves, learn more about this, learn when this started, because again, it did not start on October the 7th. It started 77 years ago. the world has to know this, because it seems they always focus on this ominous day that we all hate, October the 7th. So they really need to educate themselves. They really need to raise awareness, even in their own circles, in their own communities, about what's going on in Gaza and why it's happening and how they could maybe think of ways to stop it. So maybe they could do something. I hope they could do something, because I don't know if anything could really stop this, to be honest. Sorry for sounding so pessimistic, but nothing is helping me to feel any optimism, to be honest. Because I mean, I don't know. I just don't know, to be honest. There isn't really a right answer for this. Mm.
Please go ahead.
Maybe one of the ways is sometimes to boycott. For me, is boycotting those who fund, for example, the Israeli army, or boycott those companies who fund the war. Maybe this one of one of the effective ways that would do something is to boycott such companies, so that maybe the war at some point could just end.
And I'm wondering, Ali, you're in Doha. What is happening in Arab countries? What are Arab countries doing to stop this?
Yeah, good question. So to be honest, even Arab countries are not doing much. The whole world is not doing anything. They are all watching, because they can do more, especially when it comes to the power of governments. They can do more, but they're not doing anything. And this always surprises me how helpless they are, or how powerless they are. Maybe they are powerful enough, but they still don't want to do anything. But when it comes to the communities themselves, like for example, in Qatar, I see that boycott is something. It is something. There are many, let's say, cafes, restaurants, companies that they even had to close their shops because of the boycott thing. Same in Jordan, same in, I think even now in Italy, a boycott is doing something. So yeah, and it hurts a lot when you think about it, especially the neighboring countries like Jordan and Egypt. They can definitely do more, but they're not doing anything. So that's why, as I told you, I feel so helpless, so hopeless, so pessimistic, so disappointed, so frustrated. Yeah, no one is doing anything.
Mm. Haneen, what are your thoughts? How are you feeling when you hear what Ali and Ahmed say? I mean, you were in the United States and now Canada.
It's just hard for me. I'm ashamed of all Arabs, and not just even Arabs, all the countries that could do something for Palestinians. But I feel that we are lonely in this. All Palestinians are feeling that we have no one but ourselves. Imagine that no one is helping us to stop the genocide. No one is helping us to reunite with our families. No one is doing anything. Boycotting is something good. We boycott. People are trying to boycott. But still, Does these things stop the genocide that's going on every day? I just hope, and I'm praying for like people to move to, I don't know, never like, don't stay home and say, oh, I have nothing to do. Try to do anything you can, whatever you are as a human being can do to stop this genocide. Because sometimes I feel that since the beginning of genocide, I've been telling my friends that we are all slaves for governments, for politics. Because if we have voices, why all of us as a human being, as normal as civilians in all the countries around the world, can't stop a genocide in a small city? Like, how is this? Who's controlling this world? This sometimes drives me crazy, because I don't know like how everything is just going on, how we are living. Like, we should like just live a normal life and just ignore what's happening in Gaza, because we're not there, we're not living there. If you are like silent now, things will come to you, because if you are not supporting like those people that's that's been through a lot, it's like a horrific genocide, and you're not supporting them, that means that one day a genocide will happen in your country and nobody will care about you, because if you don't care about other people, who will care about you? So I hope people will just do whatever they can so we can stop this genocide. Because, you know, I'm just afraid of a day where I will lose my family. I don't want to come to this point. It's been 2 years. I lost a lot, but I just, maybe I'm selfish now and I'm talking only about myself, but I want to see my family again. I want to hug my brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to be separated.
Mm-hmm. We have an email connected to what you were just talking about. Philip writes, "Forgive my ignorance about this complex issue. Why aren't surrounding Arab and Muslim countries showing more support for Palestine and putting more pressure on Israel and the United States?" Who would like to take that?
Okay.
Ahmed?
Yes, please. So I appreciate this question. Thank you for it. But I would like to say that it is not a complex situation. This is not a complicated matter. It is very clear. There is an occupation and there is an occupied people. There is a colonization and there is a colonized. There is besiegers and there is besieged. There is an army. That is an army that is the biggest in the Middle East, that has been crushing the Palestinians for 22 months. It is only the Palestinians who have been killed for the past 22 months and before. It was the Palestinian people who have been killed for the past 77 years. It was the Palestinian lands confiscated. It was the Palestinian lives being hurt and killed. It is the Palestinian blood that has been spilled. And it's not complicated. I understand that in the West and in America, in the mainstream media that you have, it is portrayed as intractable. It is difficult. It's complicated. It is very historic, but it's not. It is not. It's easy. It is easy. My family did not need to die. They did not deserve to die. 55 or 60,000 Palestinians did not have to die. 240 Palestinian journalists did not have to be killed, assassinated. More than 1,700 medical staff have been killed in Gaza. Gaza did not need to be destroyed. Do you know, have you seen footage of Gaza? 90%, more than 90% of the Palestinian houses in Gaza have been erased. It is not complicated. It is easy. It is easy to see what is happening. And it is an occupation that is determined on crushing the Palestinian lives, that is determined on crushing the Palestinian existence. We did not need to die. We did not deserve to die. We are the indigenous people of the land. We have been living there for hundreds and thousands of years. We did not need to have a foreign country to come and uproot us and kill us and slaughter us and carry out a genocide against us. The Arab countries, I share the thoughts of my colleagues here. We have been disappointed. We are disappointed in everyone. And I can see all the Palestinians in Gaza, they have lost hope in everyone. We can see that the Arabs could do something more. But we have to remember, it is not the Arabs who are killing the Palestinian people. It is not the Arabs who are besieging the Palestinian people. It is not Egypt. We share borders with Egypt. But it's not Egypt that is closing the border with Gaza. It is Israel that is occupying the other side of the border. It is Israel that is occupying all of Rafah and that has destroyed all of Rafah. The Egyptians could not do anything. Unfortunately, they could not break the siege, because if they want to break the siege, they would have to do a military intervention. And Egypt is not prepared for a war with Israel. The Arabs, although they could do more for the Palestinian people, but practically speaking, there is nothing much that the Arabs can do, because Israel acts above the law, because Israel acts with impunity, unfortunately. And anyone who intends to just lift a finger or do anything for the Palestinians, they have been blocked. They've been threatened by the Israelis. And unfortunately, it is not Israel that the Palestinians are fighting right now. It is not Israel. do not believe Israel, that it is a tiny state in the middle of the Middle East. Unfortunately, the power of Israel lies in who stands behind Israel. And unfortunately, America stands behind Israel. And America is a superpower. The Arabs can't confront America. They can't confront the EU. They can't confront Israel and EU and America and the NATO and all of these powers. So it is not the fault of the Arabs. It is the fault of those who back Israel blindly. It is the fault of those who give Israel the bombs day and night to kill us and to destroy us and to threaten the entire region. It is the fault of those who back Israel and Israel that the Palestinians are dying day and night in Gaza, that the Palestinians are being starved for the past 22 months. So we have to be focused and we have to remember who is starving the Palestinians, and it is Israel. Unfortunately, it is the American government. Unfortunately, it's the British government. Unfortunately, it's the EU that still has normal diplomatic relations with Israel, and that it is still giving Israel weapons. Germany, unfortunately, it still gives Israel weapons. It still gives Israel the diplomatic cover. It is still the mainstream media in the West that gives Israel the diplomatic media coverage to continue the genocide in Gaza. All of these people are guilty, and we must talk about them.
That is Ahmed Al-Nawk, director and founder of We Are Not Numbers. He's out with a new book, We Are Not Numbers, The Voices of Gaza's Youth. We're also joined by two contributors, Ali Abu Sheikh and Haneen Abdal-Abi. Ahmed is now in London. Ali is in Doha. Haneen is now in Ontario. We have a lot of emails coming in. A lot of people are just saying, thank you for your work. We rarely hear from these voices. Carol writes, Americans are being tricked by misinformation. Whenever I write a letter to the Marin IJ, they will not print it if I mention genocide. We need to call this what it is. This is censorship. Wayne writes, can your guest describe life even before the Gaza assaults, what it was like to drive with different colored license plates? I've been told that a car with a white plate can make a commute in 20 to 30 minutes. That would take a yellow license plate over 3 hours to make the same drive. Is that true? Another listener says, I've become more and more aware of the treatment of Palestinians since 2006 when Israel was bombing Lebanon, the country my paternal grandparents were from. Over the years, I've been so appalled by these tactics, but what is happening now is more outrageous than what's happening in the past. Every day I wake up to the horrors and they seem to get worse instead of better. I've been crying so many times over these last 2 years, and I'm not even there experiencing the horrors firsthand. Kevin says just 8% of Democrats are now supporting the ongoing assault, yet California senators are staying silent about the complicity. Padilla and Schiff both voted against Bernie Sanders' joint resolution providing for congressional disapproval of the foreign sale to Israel of weapons. And then just a lot of questions about what else we can do here. Ali, would you like to take, we're almost out of time. Would you like to respond to any of these questions?
Yes, sure. Actually, I want just only to add something to what Ahmed just said. I don't always like the idea how some people just focus on Muslim Arab neighboring countries, which again makes it kind of racial, like it's not really about ethnicity, it's not really about religion, it's not really about politics, it's not really about history, it's not really about land, it's about the humanity. And the whole world should do something. We shouldn't blame it on the Arab Muslim neighboring countries only. No, the whole world. How would you watch such images coming from Gaza and do nothing? And then you blame it maybe on those countries who are close to Gaza or to Palestine. This doesn't make much sense to me. And something else I would also like to add is even myself, I had some misinformation at some point, how most people used to call this as a Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And this exact word, which is conflict, really frustrates me because this is not even a conflict. For me, it's a Zionist Israeli settler colonization. And I even was corrected, interestingly, by a German professor I had in my university here in Doha, who really kind of explained that what's going on and what has been going on is an Israeli settler colonization. It's not a conflict between two countries or two armies or et cetera. And regarding what Americans can do, just one last thing, is to really, as I mentioned, raise more awareness, to try to talk more about this, to try to educate more people about this so that maybe they could take action. And just I want to mention just one last thing, is that I lived in the US before, and it's a country that I really cherish and love. And I was surrounded by so much love from Americans, from my university, professors, from everyone. But then after the war and what's going on, it really hurt me, because you could consider America was my girlfriend, and then it betrayed me in a very bad way, that I even lost the passion to visit America again because of everything that's going on right now.
Well, I'm sorry that you had this experience, Ali, and I just really thank you all for your stories. Thank you for coming on. We have so many people emailing asking, what else can I do to stop this? Ali Abu Sheikh is a Canaanite Palestinian writer and digital humanist who lived through the first 6 months of the assault. He's now based in Doha. Hanin Abdal Abi is an English literature graduate and writer for We Are Not Numbers, now based in Ontario. Ahmed Al-Naq is director and co-founder of We Are Not Numbers, co-author of the new book We Are Not Numbers, The Voices of Gaza's Youth. Ahmed lost his brother Ayman on July 19th, 2014, killed by an Israeli missile. His mom, Basima, died of breast cancer in 2020 because of the blockade. On October 22nd, 2023, an Israeli bombardment killed 21 of his very close family members, including his father, sisters, nieces, and nephews. Ahmed is now based in London. Ahmed, Ali, and Hanin, thank you so much for joining us.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're
very
so
much
welcome.
For
thank you.
Us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.